Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it's 3:08 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is February 14th, so happy Valentine's Day. I thought we'd kick off with the M2 year over year. It's down to negative 1.3% as of the end of last year. So we know that the growth in money supply exploded during the pandemic, and then the growth rate deteriorated quite considerably from the early part of 2021 and is now negative. So they're just beginning to take money out of the system on a net basis. But it's important to realize that's never happened before. So we know that the supply of money is, in fact, contracting. Now let's just think about that from the perspective of money supply. So the money supply might be contracting, and then financial conditions are improving. So then let's just look at what that looks like. So we've had a substantial rebound in asset prices, and financial conditions were about as tight as they were in 2016 and in 2020, and then again in 2022. And I guess we can look at that on a line chart, and it will look a bit more easy to understand. And it's also worth reminding ourselves that financial conditions back in 2002 were tighter than at any point since then, except for the financial crisis in 2008. So we saw financial conditions get back to what we might consider to be the lows of medium-term corrections, because we saw similar values in 2011, 12, 2015, 16, 2020, and then again at the end of 2022. So for anyone who's willing to give the benefit of the doubt to the secular bull market on stocks, then it would be reasonable to conclude that all other factors being equal, the lows are in, and that we're going to have a continued bull market. But then I think it's important to pay attention to other things as well, because the yield curve spread is inverted, and it became more inverted in here today. And it was not inverted in 2011 or 2015. It was inverted for an exceptionally brief period in 2019, and then the worst of the selling took place when the yield curve spread was cruising up through the zero bound on its way through 50 basis points. And then the stock market bottomed, and then we saw the peak of the yield curve widening in the early part of 2021. And as it contracted, it started to really ignite fervor in the stock market. Then we had a big correction in 2022. But what is quite normal? Let's just remember the fact that the yield curve spread was inverted in late 2005 and the stock market peaked in 2007. And it became briefly inverted in 1998 and then became fully inverted right at the beginning of 2000. And we didn't really see a low in the stock market until 2002. But it was after the we saw this period of inversion. It's not so much when it is becoming more inverted. It's usually when it becomes less inverted that we see the worst of the selling pressure. So we continue to see that the yield curve spread is contracting right now, and that is helping to support asset prices. There's a temptation to think that we're not going to have a recession at all, but interest rates are still rising. Money supply growth is negative. Then it's also worth reminding ourselves that full employment is almost always evident right before a recession, because you can't have a recession without unemployment. So in order for there to be a recession, then you've got to come off full employment. So we're not quite there yet. And it might be a while before we start to see that, because there's a dearth of workers, because so many of the baby boomer generation used the pandemic as an opportunity to retire. And then the jump in asset prices has also been quite considerable. So people have more equity in their homes and they feel more secure financially. So I think that's rather important. Now, there is another thing that I think is also important, and it's the cycle in Bitcoin. I've often said that I think Bitcoin is a liquidity barometer, and the price was up $550 in here today and bouncing from the lower side of this little range. And more importantly, it has broken the sequence of lower rally highs that had been evident since really this peak in March of 22. But that was only a, that was a failed upside break. And apart from that, there was a clear sequence of lower rally highs since the peak in 2021. So as long as Bitcoin is holding that 20,000 level, then the chances are that the lows are in fact in. And the next halving will be in April of 2024. So let's just think about that for a moment. If we look at the longer term chart, well, the halving occurred in 2020. So what we saw in 2019 was the bottom, and we had a good size rebound. And then subsequently, prices rolled over again. And then we got the halving in, I think it was April, May. The price had pulled back quite considerably before that. But then within the next few months, it had already broken out and gone on one of these really exceptional accelerations higher. So was quite, and this wasn't the first time. We'd also seen this in the past, where the market bottoms about a year ahead of the halving. So it is likely that we've seen the bottom. It doesn't mean that we're immediately going to break on the upside. In other words, we're not going to take out the peak from previously. But there is certainly the scope for a good-sized rally before the halving. Some disillusionment and impatience before it, and then a subsequent rally. Then it's also worth reminding ourselves that the big surges in Bitcoin occur in conjunction with either monetary or fiscal largesse. So we know that the halving is in April of 24, and it's not impossible that we could have a significant liquidity provision event occur in 2024. And there is certainly the scope that it might take that amount of time for all of the liquidity that was poured into the market in 2020 and 2021 to get excised from the market and from asset prices, and then for unemployment to rise. Now, that would also suggest that there is the potential that prices could go up further from here. So let's look at the NASDAQ 100, and it has broken its sequence of lower rally highs, and it is now steadying from the region of the 200-day moving average. Now, that is despite the fact that inflation figures today came out exactly as expected and continue to remain quite high. So that suggests that there will be additional interest rate hikes, and if we don't get additional hikes, that they will be holding rates higher for longer. So that implies that we're going to continue to see financial conditions tighten up. And then let's think about the 2-year yield. So 2-year yield popped on the upside in here today. It's back up to 4.6%. And if we get upside follow through tomorrow, then the chances are that it is going to be pushing on to a new recovery high. And the easiest way to predict where interest rates are going to go is to look at the 2-year, and this continues to look like a consistent trend overall. Ken Rogoff was on Bloomberg TV this morning talking about the potential that the short-term interest rate will get to 6%. So 6% is quite a bit higher than where we are right now. And there's still a significant number of companies that depend on debt financing to fund their day-to-day operations. So obviously that's something that needs to be taken into account, that the higher interest rates go, the lower that money supply goes, then the greater the likelihood is that there will be a comeuppance event, that there will be in an impact on corporate profits. But we're not there yet, and we don't generally get those kinds of events until that yield curve spread turns upwards. So, in the meantime, we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. Now, I thought the activity that we're seeing in Silvergate at the moment is really quite interesting. The share was trading at $160 in March of 2022, and it's at 17 now. So, that's a really significant decline. Now, if we look at it on a log scale chart, well, then we can see that there is a sequence of higher reaction lows since the beginning of this month, or excuse me, of this year. And it was up in a fairly dynamic manner in here today. Now, it's the second most shorted stock on the market. And then we have these big institutional investors taking meaningful positions. So they're betting that it's not going to go bust. And it offers clear leverage to Bitcoin, as it is a Bitcoin lender. But those loans are backed with cash. So it is a normal kind of bank that dabbles in Bitcoin, and it is at least surviving. Now, then let's think about some of these companies that engage in crypto mining. And Riot Platforms is also putting in some bottoming activity. And if we look at this on a log scale chart, well, then we're well off the lows put in at the beginning of this year, and it could potentially now be putting in a higher reaction low. Think that if the cycle in Bitcoin is going to repeat, then there's the clear likelihood that we're in the region of the lows. And that's also something that is likely to encourage some speculative activity in things like the ARK Innovation ETF, which is now firming from the region of the 200-day moving average. So I think this is a reasonably important development that I think more investors are rowing in behind the idea that we're not going to have any kind of landing at all. I'm certainly not in that camp, but the momentum behind that idea is likely to propel asset prices in the short term, and then subsequently, because financial conditions are so high, are so easy, into an environment where money supply growth is falling, it means that only can be interpreted as high leverage. And then ultimately, high leverage becomes a victim of high interest rates. But we're just not at that point yet. So there is certainly the potential for additional upside in the short term. And I think a lot of people are keeping an eye on the high yield spread and the performance of high yield bonds. And they are bouncing. And there's been a sequence of higher reaction lows since November, and it's still intact. And then when we look at those spreads, well, they're not pushing on to new high ground. And in fact, we're still below the 200-day moving average. And with the performance of stocks in here today, it's unlikely to be popping on the upside in the short term. So that at least is being viewed as a positive development in the short term, even though interest rates are not going to come down. Investors are willing to give the benefit of the doubt to the central banks of the world in raising rates to combat inflation, and they're not giving much credence to the view that deflation is a more pressing concern over the medium term. Now, think natural gas is also rather interesting in here. The price has collapsed and it's beginning to show some evidence of support building. So it was up 20 cents in here today and coming up to the upper side of this exceptionally short-term range. But we are very oversold. Prices surged because of price-insensitive imports to Europe. Then they collapse when Europe stopped buying. Ultimately, Europe will have to come back into the market to refill their reserves. And that is despite the fact that those reserves are not empty because the winter was quite mild. They still have to fill them up for winter next year. So I think there's clear potential here that natural gas can rebound. Then oil prices were down a dollar. I think Russia is still successfully exporting its oil, but the price was well off the low. And we have a sequence of higher reaction lows here. And I think what we really see is that the US government has set a high floor. And we're going to see more investment in offshore and higher cost of production zones are going to become more interesting from an investment perspective if these prices remain high. That's certainly attractive for some of the offshore drillers, and Suncor Energy in Canada is firming from the region of the 200-day moving average and the upper side of what has been really a 14-year base formation. So I think there's certainly some interest in the oil sector, and I think that also helps to highlight the fact that oil is not going anywhere. That there's obviously a lot of electric cars being sold, and I think that total was approaching half a trillion last year. But the reality is that not everybody is going to buy an electric car, and the resources necessary to be able to buy a car where the cost of every resource that goes into it is rising, that's obviously going to be problematic. The average cost of an automobile continues to rise, and that's a real push factor in terms of inflation, because when people can't afford to upgrade their vehicle, whereas they have spent their entire lives being able to do that, well, then that's a real kick in terms of standard of living. Now, it doesn't mean that you're always going to be upgrading into an ever more luxurious version of whatever it is you're driving. That's more lifestyle creep. But when someone has to downgrade the kind of vehicle that they're buying because the prices have gone up, then that really is a kick in the teeth in terms of the living standard. And then you're going to start to see wage demand growth picking up. And I think this is certainly a factor in the strike action we're getting in the UK. And wage growth in the USA, the Atlanta Fed wage tracker is still at 6% and not really coming down all that fast. So we still have a lot of wage demands, and we still have this environment where inflation is still running higher than many people are comfortable with. So we're certainly seeing enthusiasm for stocks, and this is a clear momentum move. But to completely rule out the potential for a recession, I think would be the triumph of hope over experience. And gold prices were trying to steady in here, but still in a corrective phase overall. If interest rates go up and that helps to support the dollar, then the likelihood is that we're going to see a deeper consolidation in the gold price. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.